Welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams. Hello and welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams. Rumours of our demise have been greatly exaggerated. We're here with Eric from Zelek, and that's not just a pun I made up. That's actually just factually correct. I've been told no more puns on the new and improved Game of Nodes.
Is it weekly now?
Is it weekly? Oh, we bike.
No, it's not a weekly.
We don't even know, right?
Do you know what? That's muscle memory. This is still, remember, 143 episodes. Although we had a little month off to reset. I was just ill the entire month. I was just in pieces. But 143 is like it's no surprises in my muscle memory. I'm going to keep saying weekly until forever.
Yeah, okay.
I don't
know. All right. Yeah, I like that.
I can't remember. My memory, you know, whatever. Like, it's rote learned at this point. Like, we've done it so much. We've done it through the good times and the bad. And anyway.
It's Eric, weekly in our hearts. But for those who want accurate information, it's moving to fortnightly.
Yeah.
So, it's weekly in our hearts.
Okay, so we should let's do a tiny bit of housekeeping. And then we will talk to our guest. This is a New Year's resolution, a little bit late. We are going to talk to our guest before the halfway point of the poddo. But. Yeah. We're now bi-weekly, 2200 UTC. That's 1 hour later on a Thursday.
Whoa. One day later.
Not a Wednesday. So we're moving back one day, moving back 1 hour. Everything else remains the same.
Our mandate, our core mandate now is to talk to people. So we will be striving to have at least somebody show up every episode, starting with Eric of Zelek. And,
where else would we start?
We will also make an effort to know what that person does and is a part of. So
Jerome did his homework this time. He sent me a pre-show doc. Yeah.
We had a pre-meeting to make some very brief and confusing notes, and we will make every effort to include them in conversation and talk about what they do.
Are you okay, Noel?
Yeah.
And if we don't, I will quit.
Is he on a prompter?
Yeah, it feels like you know, one of those things when a politician does something real bad, you know, before Trump, and you could just do whatever you wanted and nobody would catch you out anyway. And they have to stand up on that podium and they've got their like wife and their kids next to them and they're really like stock still. And they're just like, I will make every effort to make up for bad thing, and whilst not talking about bad thing, and serving the citizens of this town, that's you, Noel, right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I like your little demands either. Like, if Schulze doesn't read the notes, you're going to quit. Like, is that what you're saying?
Well,
I mean, Schulze's not reading the notes. I didn't read the notes. No,
fuck me. What do
I know? I know Eric.
Schulze's a busy guy. Dogs and a baby. Yeah.
But did you know that Eric's a cat lady?
Yes. Yeah, that was like our first topic.
No, I didn't. It's true. You told me you liked bees. What is this?
I like bees.
I mean,
so I do like bees. It's true. As a matter of fact, I've got a lavender 5 tattoo. That's not true. It is a bee tattoo, but.
Gave you shit about that too. I was like, what the fuck?
Why do you have a bee tattoo?
Yeah, I was like, where's your rhino tattoo? And he's like, well, it's not really Schulze.
I'm not allowed to discuss where the rhino tattoo is on the podcast. They've asked me not to show that one.
Here's a fun game you can play at home. There are a lot of companies in the world called Rhino that do a whole bunch of random ass stuff, right?
That is
if
true.
You see out in the wild Rhino on something like a company, like a logo, something like that, take a picture of it, at us on Twitter at Game of Nodes, and show us what you got, right? Because this is I would say every couple of months in the group chat,
it is everywhere.
Gets so far I have bollard manufacturer,
yeah,
gym equipment, yeah.
What is that?
Like the little
is like one of those posts to stop cars, you know, that they put in the road.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just like manufactured by Rhino, and I was like, "Fucking hey, amazing!" but yeah, gym equipment, obviously. Bollards, and then there was something else. It was like think I was
there's a deck. There's an actual deck.
Stamped rhino, but totally different rhino. So I've seen three in the wild.
Mm-hmm. There is the rhino rack, which is like a roof.
There's a rhino rack. I have that in my truck. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. There's a rhino. There's a dex called rhino. Hey, listen, it's a popular animal.
Why do the logos always have the rhino looking right as well?
I know, right?
It looks right. Like, is that a thing? Is that a thing where the logo has to look right?
Yeah, mine's pointing up and to the right.
Is the Jesus fish that's really left?
That's really where this business and this market is going.
Where is the Jesus fish?
Well, to that the right. is a keen observation.
Does the Jesus fish point left? Because then maybe it's that the rhino is Satan. Because they're off the head as well.
Oh, the
rhino is not Satan.
That's fair.
Yes.
I think it's probably the, like we read left to right. With tattoos, you're supposed to point something towards the interior of the body. I don't know.
Is that right?
Yeah. You're supposed to point something towards the middle line of the body. You don't have something facing out of the body typically.
So. I did find one by searching rhino logo that is facing to the left, but maybe that's just some sort of beta like designer who doesn't understand.
Do you feel like it's a less trustworthy company than if the rhino were facing to the right?
Obviously.
I feel like they're being aggressive towards me, to be honest.
Or was it upside down because it's in Australia?
Yeah,
it's upside down, it's back to front. I don't know what is right.
I don't know what the hell's going on.
That's the Coriolis effect. Yeah, that's exactly right. So in the Northern Hemisphere, they all face to the right. So
that's right. That's exactly what's going on.
I did know
what this podcast is about.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Which direction logos face?
Mm-hmm.
I'm subscribed. I'm one of your six subscribers. So
we're finding out new things all the time.
I love it.
One of our six subscribers.
I'll have you know, Eric, we have very close to 1,000 subscribers. Some of them may be fake. I don't know.
You know what, man? Still counts, baby.
Those bots got to learn from somebody where to stake their cryptocurrency.
Ay.
Let's move on. Eric.
Yes.
You went to ETH Denver. None of us did. What was the vibe like?
You know what, man? It was kind of mellow, right? I think a lot of people have had a different takes on what that means, right? I felt like it was chill. It was relaxed. You know what was nice? Is it was like 60 degrees Fahrenheit. It was like 15, 16 degrees Celsius the whole time. I'm from Minnesota, so it was much warmer. Got a little bit of sun. I enjoyed myself while I was out there. I tend to. I think Denver is a perfectly acceptable city. Although, candidly, the city of Denver's logo is a little too close to Zelek's logo. I've written them a letter.
Have you proposed a forest board that they put on their sign, their city sign? Welcome to Denver. Perfectly acceptable city.
You know, it is of the cities of the world. It is one. No, I like Denver just fine. You know, man, I had a really good time personally. I think that with all conferences, right, I think the real alpha is at the side events. Mm-hmm. And part of that's because I tend to find that, and I mean, this is true of the time that we've spent together, right? I tend to find that the face-to-face interactions with the people that you really care about, and the people that you're really interested to work with or get to know better, et cetera, those things continue to matter quite a lot and continue to be really high impact, right? I think it's fun to have a lot of side events. It's cool to have the main conference itself be this like nucleation or shelling point that brings everybody together, gives people the opportunity to get on stage, talk about their thing, have cool panels. Seemed like there were still cool panels at the main event, right? I think the main event is interesting and it's attractive for people that are new to the space, whether that's retail or whether that's just folks that have just joined. You know, I think that that continues to be the sort of thing that matters because it gives them that experience. Right. I don't find myself spending a ton of time there other than to go harass my friends that are working the booths for their various projects. And then I get to take their shirts and call them nerds or whatever. but I tend to continue to enjoy that. So I had a great time at Denver. Got to see some people that I got to meet much of the Zelek team in person for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, I recently joined that team just in the middle of January or something like that. So we basically had a little offsite. Got to hang out, got to co-work together, which I, again, really enjoyed. Wonderful to get to spend some time with them all in person and learn more about each of them and, I don't know, like go bowling and stuff like that together.
How big is that?
So we are, between 40 and 50. The extreme bulk of that is security researchers, right? So our auditors, 35, 40, something in that range, I believe, for our auditing team. And then about 15 people either in sales or back office, that kind of thing. So, but great to really, again, spend some time there. I think the take home message for me, I had a ton of fun in Denver. The side events were the key alpha, as always. It's kind of like make your own schedule, right? It's an a la carte menu to get to spend time and learn about different things and talk to people building different things. I had another point I was going to make, and it has totally eluded me.
I think in my experience at these events, like my primary reason for side events is to eat, because I can't afford to, being Australian. So, you can always get some good sliders at the side event and a sneaky beer just to keep your sustenance up while you like secondarily do some BD.
Yeah, man, sliders and beer is like, I think that's what BD stands for. You just have to pull letters out of them.
Yeah, everyone's fueled by sliders and beer. Did you find like that there were many, this might sound dumb, did you find that there was much attendance from like users and the public, or do you think like this year is primarily attended by like people in the industry, devs and that type of stuff, VC?
I think Denver in particular tends to be one where it's the attendees are most likely to be people that work in the industry and have worked in the industry for a while. That's my experience. I find that something like Consensus has more folks that are maybe TradFi that it's entering the industry, or people that are like adjacent to crypto and building something that is crypto-ish or uses crypto. But I tend to find that Denver in particular is primarily people that work in the industry. Does that make sense? I feel like I rarely see just users. Although actually, here's a cool thing. EigenLayer put on this hackathon that was like multiple days long, and they brought in teams from different universities across the country. On my flight back home, I actually had the opportunity to meet up with met the president of the University of Minnesota Blockchain Club, because I saw he was wearing an EigenLayer swag, and I actually just had a cup of coffee with him, about an hour ago. So I was just, I caused this to be a hair tardy because I was hurrying back from that. But so that was cool, right?
That's cool.
I think, yeah, absolutely, right? We don't have a huge crypto scene out here in Minnesota, which is surely at least partially my fault, given I've worked in the industry for as long as I have and have made very little effort to like get out there and do things.
I know Ian's out there. He's a validator. He's out there in Minnesota as well. So you all should start a local meetup.
What team is he with?
PFC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. You guys should plug me in.
My man.
Yeah. Sorry, Ian. Bad news. no, that's great.
Bad news bears.
Bad news bears. I know
who you are now.
Duxed.
I'm going to get together with them and we'll do a little presentation for their club. I've got some friends that, that work in the industry that live out here. It's not a ton of them. But yeah, so it'll be fun.
It's amazing. Like you don't think there are people around, and like you may even try to seek them out and not be able to find any. But I thought that was true of Brisbane here in sunny Queensland, Australia. And I just got added to an Oz Builders group on Telegram by someone. And turns out they are around and they're building stuff. They're active chatting. So I think I might start trying to do the same here and just going and joining some of these meetup groups and share with the crowd, a bit like AA, I suppose.
So you can go find out about the latest.
It's a bit.
I mean, sorry, no offense, obviously, because Alora previous project, but where I am, it's literally Ethereum, L2, AI, blockchain. And every time I go to one of those meetups, like everybody you talk to, they're just like,
have you heard about Ethereum?
This thing that's happening in Ethereum, and it's like, yeah, we primarily work in Cosmos. They're like, what's that? Is it an AI thing? And you're like, it's, you could actually, I guess,
sure,
you can use it for whatever. Okay. And they're like, but are you doing an AI thing? And you're like, No, and not on Ethereum. As I mentioned, we're not in that ecosystem really, other than SSV stuff. And by that point, they've already died of boredom and they're in the ground. Degeneracy needs constant stimulus to stay alive. It's like I give off that anti vibe. Like my vibes are negative towards that Ethereum thing, and then
yeah, man, you start talking about DVT, and then the lights go out. So
exactly, I'm just like, yeah, I don't think it really works unless you start thinking about DVT, and then just boom, damn, they're down and out. You're just like fucking checking their pulse. It's like he ain't getting up.
So Eric, like, you have been involved in an SDK chain, a Cosmos SDK chain, Allura, and moving on into like the rest of crypto with Zelic. I mean, they aren't born out of the Cosmos SDK scene. You know, their roots are in other, their roots are not out of validating and stuff like that. They're more like security dev. We'll talk more about that later, but being a part of that team, like, do you find that there is sort of other more exciting blockchain stuff that's developing out there that's not associated with the SDK? Is there like anything that you've seen at the moment that is like exciting? Not necessarily in like use case and that type of stuff, more like on the actual blockchain technology ecosystems.
Sure. I think it's a tough one to answer, right? I think that one of the fascinating and fantastic things about Cosmos in particular is that, like, I mean, it's tried and true. It's battle tested, right? You can essentially build any type of thing you would like to on top of it, right? You can look around and see, like, achieving consensus by leveraging Cosmos and then having that be the historical record for something. I think it makes it super flexible. I'm trying to think of an actual answer to your question.
I mean, even within Cosmos, a lot of teams I'm not going to say months, years, like in the last 12 months, have pivoted from actually using just like the Cosmos SDK to just pulling out and using Comet BFT and then building like EVM chains out of it.
Well, I mean, Hyperliquid is a good example of that, right? Like, there's a lot of Cosmos DNA in Hyperliquid. I think if you look at what the factors around how you engage with a node on Cosmos, right? They've leveraged a bunch of that in building out their own kind of customized SDK for that. Yeah, man, I don't know. I think that you look at some of the interoperability stuff like Espresso, not strictly Cosmos, but does leverage some version of Hot Stuff, right? Which is some type of offshoot of Tendermint in some way or another. I guess I don't have an answer for this question, man. There's so many of these networks and these chains and like constructions that I'm still learning about, right? I think one of the problems with this industry, it's a good thing now, right? Rewind 6 or 7 years. I mean, I've been in crypto since working in crypto full time since like 2020, but I've been in the scene since like 2017 or whatever, right? I think it was easy enough to keep track of like what's going on in 2017, 2018, 2019. And then in 2020, this Cambrian explosion happened, right? And a lot of this building and this sort of advanced research was happening behind the scenes. And certainly I wasn't really aware of Cosmos at the time because I have long been pretty EVM native. But we get to this place now where, dude, if you close your eyes for a week, you're like, what the hell is a pre-confirmation? And why is everybody talking about it now? Or whatever, right? You just get to a place where you can't keep up. And it's cool, right? Especially if you're an autodidact and you have a curious mind. There's just constantly something to learn about, like, what's Mega ETH? What's Monad? Like, I know that these things are not necessarily strictly new, but how is Anisha different from XYZ, you know?
It also means that there's a constant stream of iteration and also a constant, like a ever expanding wasteland of old ideas that are chains, which, I mean, some people here know all too much about that you're on an endless support regime for things that were a thing and now they're not. So yeah, I get what you mean. You blink, you miss it. There's like so much new stuff popping up overnight. I definitely can't keep on top of it.
So is that a primary like focus from the BD side and the kind of like the day-to-day like bread and butter, I guess, the organization? Is it like Ethereum or is it more widely based than that? I mean, I assume it's a bit of everything, but like generally is the bulk of it sort of like Ethereum and that ecosystem?
So we are super widely based, right? One of the things that we pride ourselves in is the ability to rapidly like scale up and ramp up to in-depth knowledge in like new alt VMs, right? We've done a ton of work, obviously, in like the EVM DeFi space, but we've also done a ton of work with core node software for things like Cosmos, a lot of these Move L1s. That's really where we pride ourselves in, is the ability to be flexible and to be first to a new network or a new kind of regime, like you say, or a new VM. That's one of the things that we really pride ourselves in. And we've borne that out over the years, right? We've worked deeply with, I mean, a lot of the different teams building on Move VMs and zero knowledge stuff. And it's, so suffice, I think the short answer is that in many ways, a good portion of the work that we do is EVM based, but I think that's more a function of the market and people building in the market than it is what our appetite is, or really even what our expertise is in. So does that make sense?
Yeah, fair play. Oh, it's interesting you mentioned Move as well, because that's, I guess, a relatively very, well, in the grand scheme of things, like, it's probably ancient now. It's been out for 2 years in production. So, but I guess in terms of like high profile chains, there's, you know, it's a more recent high profile virtual machine, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it, right? You know, we end up indexing to something, right? You know, many of you guys are pretty heavily indexed to the Cosmos world, but that doesn't mean you're not totally capable in different VMs, right? And understanding the intricacies of running those. But yeah, I think, like I said, it's one of those things where you like, you blink and then you're like, oh shit, there's like 10 new chains and they're all based on this kind of core Move infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. I better hurry up and figure that out.
What's your feeling? Like, I guess, like, it'd be interesting to hear a different perspective on this, but like, I think whenever we come back from like, especially conferences, obviously first question is vibe check. But second question is like, what, like, you tend to get like from your own individual perspective and your experience, like a feeling of a direction of travel or something that's going to maybe, you know, even if that direction of travel is just how it's going to affect you, like, what's your sense of like how the next 12 months is like going to shake up for you in terms of like your focus and your direction of travel, like based on what you've seen recently?
That's a really great question. I mean, the short answer to the vibe check is like, I think for as cynical as I am, I remain an eternal optimist. And I want to take away the silver lining from everything, right? Denver was lower energy, I think, than in previous years that I've attended. But I think that's for a few reasons. One, the market's doing whatever the hell it's doing, which is kind of insane. Candidly, I didn't talk about prices with pretty much anybody. That didn't really come up. But I think it's just that the way things have gone over the last 12, 18, 24 months, people have a little fatigue, right? These like rapid fire releases of things have made people a little tired. But I think that the encouraging thing about the vibe was that people aren't giving up, right? The people that I know that are building cool stuff are still here for the long term. They're still interested. They're still engaged. Maybe they've kind of like got a little whiplash from how things have been, but they are interested and they're committed to. I don't know, moving the space forward as a whole, right? And doing cool, unique shit that moves the needle. I think that really is my takeaway, is that people are like sick of kind of extractive stuff and extractive players, extractive, I don't know, protocols or whatever. And they're really keen to like talk to people about what they're actually building and how they can actually work together. Like Logo X Logo is out and it's like, what is this fundamental thing that we're doing? This atomic collaboration that actually matters, that each party is uniquely bringing something to. There's that. You asked me a second question and it was something to the effect of like, where do I see my trajectory over the next 12 months and what I'm going to be focusing on? For me, I think as a function of the move for me, which, you know, was a Chainlink years before, I was a at Chainlink node operator Linkpool, who does validation work for a number of different chains too now. And then I was the head of technical ecosystem at Allura, right, where I onboarded the validator core, which is why I know you chuckleheads. And I worked on technical BD stuff. They're a crypto AI company, worked on technical BD stuff there. For me, I think the biggest difference is I'm going to be more focused on L1s and L2s and their ecosystems, right? Like Ink, made some great connections with those guys. I think what they're doing is really cool. I think the entire notion of, like, I don't want to call it a centralized exchange sponsored L2, but like that's where their DNA comes from, obviously, right? They're closely affiliated with Kraken. They're born out of that. I think if you look at Base and the key innovations they've made and the benefit that they have from the tooling that comes out of Coinbase, which is to say things like, you know, their agent software development kit or the like massive distribution that the Coinbase wallet confers. I think those are all important and powerful things. So for me, I guess the take home message is like, I want to learn more about L1s in the space, focus on how we can bring value to them, their different ecosystems. Solana is one that I just like need to continue digging into and diving into. I think that there's a big shift in this may just be sampling bias for me or perspective bias, that it seems like there's a lot of teams that are building really cool stuff that moves the needle on Solana, right? You know, there's Solana's long had this rap for like, you know, pump that fun or whatever is like the only use case for it. I think that's, again, I think that's sampling bias in a lot of ways, right? Like that's what people are talking about. And so that's what people see, and it's engaging and it's fun to really see a 10,000x or whatever. And so that's what people want to talk about. Crypto Twitter is like not excited about RWAs or whatever, but I think that that's the stuff that actually is something. So,
yeah, I think like just with Solana, people want to build where there's liquidity, right? And money. And I think while, you know, a lot of the meme coin stuff might've just been a passing fad that, what was that? Oh, was that the sticker?
Yeah. You gotta love that lag to Australia. Everybody else laughs, so they're like 5 seconds later, no reaction.
So, like, you know, if from my perspective, the meme coin stuff brought users and liquidity to Solana in a big way, and now that is maybe a playground where people can actually build out of there into more meaningful things. Now that there's more attention on Solana, I mean, like the, you know, again, a meme coin, but I mean, the Trump coin was on Solana. So that's brought in an exponential number of people. So,
I mean, you're not wrong, right?
Who will never come back?
Yeah, that may unfortunately be true. I don't remember who said this to me, but it's a thing that I've long believed, right? Toys precede tools. I mean, you see that in like childhood development. Little kids play with toys that are like the tools they see adults using. And I think that's also true in this space. When you're seeing people build things, you build something, you get something like Pump.Fun, and it brings people in and it gets them engaged and it gets them using the chain. And then suddenly the guys that built Phantom or whatever are like, oh shit, this needs to work better or whatever. Right. And now, To Phantom's credit, that was one of the best user experiences I've ever had with a wallet. That felt good. It was easy to use. It was nice to use. You know, so toys precede tools, which is to say, like, you get this stuff that's engaging and fun and maybe like not super serious. And mm-hmm. that enables the people that are building around it to go, oh, well, we need to make this better. Because when people get here to actually build stuff, that experience needs to be quite good for them. So,
or even just try to use some things that are good when they're not being used, but trash once they get some users. Like, I know Eric being in the, being in the, you know, big in the RPC space with distributed RPC. I think he works with teams that tend to find their issues when the users come, right? And then it's like a scramble to try and fix those things. So
when the traffic goes up 100%, you mean?
Yeah, like when the traffic 100x is overnight, and all of a sudden the five queries that you were making to like display a price become a problem.
Yeah, right. Oh, we're calling the RPC 25 times for every element. Oh,
page load has 450 RPC calls. Or okay, 1,000. Better work on that.
Yeah.
But that's also, I mean, obviously you're right for starters, but that's also it's a software engineering problem with, especially maybe in ecosystems with an SDK. It's a huge problem in any ecosystem where you don't have.
So what you're saying is the barrier to entry may be quite low in the development cycle, and that potentially there's not best practices coming out of.
It's simply this, right? If you go and work for like a chain of fucking off licenses, right? As an engineer, they've got a lot of money because they're selling a lot of booze and fags, right? They're selling a shitload of tinnies. And so
you just threw down a lot of British terminology.
Tinnies. Yeah, I have no idea. Like, we're closely aligned with your lingo, and I got fucking that's no idea.
I threw in tinnies at the end to catch you up, Noel. That's why I said tinnies.
Yeah, what are tinnies? What, is that like a toonie from Canada or what?
It's just a can of beer, isn't it?
Can of beer.
Oh.
Okay. Oh.
Booze and sick, booze and fags, beer and cigarettes, right? It's like every corner shop, you know, it's what their bread and butter is, right? It's booze and fags. But if you work for like a chain of corner shops, right? You as an engineer, they're going to be like, oh well, if we have some kind of delivery service or something where it's just like we'll deliver in like a half mile from our shop, build this thing, optimize it. They're going to give you a budget, and the budget is going to be like always in a big, in any company, right? It will be less than you actually need, right? But it will be some amount of money, and it will be quarterly, and it will be regular, and you can bank on it, and you can start to come up with a plan and then build and then optimize from there. And like, I guess what I'm saying is it's as much that the technology is new. You have very little time to ramp up with it. There are a lot of people who don't understand some of the trade-offs of the technology on top of those two problems, which is that you're trying to build, run before you can walk. You need to beat your competitors, and everything in the space is going super, super fast. So it's got typey, typey, faster. And then you also have like this inherent problem of, I think a lot of the builders are bootstrapping, the ones who are small, especially for smart contract level stuff. And I think that problem goes over to Cosmos chains because the barrier to entry is lower. There's a lot of bootstrapping, which means the money's running out. And then the final problem is that once you get there, the economic sustainability of your project is quite often out of your hands. And so often I think builders have a lot of other problems on their plate, which don't extend to query optimization. Or it might be something that they just figured, oh, we'll figure it out. And if that, and that becomes, is a good problem to have, right? Extra users. You call somebody like SERP and you say, hey, got way more users than we thought. Bill us. We've got some money coming in, right? And so I think like a lot of problems that would maybe be a software concern in a different industry end up becoming an infrastructure concern, because don't build, you know, Yagni, right? Don't build anything you're not going to need. And your project, like all startups, especially so in crypto, is likely to fail. So why do read optimization, right?
I mean, this also falls into the toys precede tools kind of thing, right? When there's still toys, like whenever something fails, it's almost fine. You're kind of enjoying it. You're like, wow, that was catastrophic. Can't believe that worked. And then as more people come, then you have to, use that toy time to flush things out. It's kind of like the adoption cycle of new products where hobbyists come in. Look at the Pebble Watch, right? Comes in, bugs everywhere, hobbyists love it. And then as the hobbyists, you know, help create it into a more official product, then like early adopters, hobbyists, and then that can actually go mainstream, right? It follows the same cycle as the toys to tools idea.
But the interesting thing here is that I think the amount of infrastructure is needed is far higher for the toys than it is for the tools. So like the stuff that we've gotten caught on has been, you know, mints or like huge meme coin bullshit runs where people are just fucking running spam bots and all that kind of stuff. But if we actually had an RWA chain that had, I don't know, like some sort of loan closure, and it had pure visibility all the way back, and we had, you know, a set of investors who were providing short-term loans on X, Y, or Z or something, there's very little transactions for that. Like, it's totally nothing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's all these fucking crazy things. We're building all this shit up, that has, or not to pick on Aptos, but like the Aptos traffic has come from Tamagotchi type shit where people are feeding. What is that thing?
It wasn't like feeding. It was poking the cat.
All right, so people, right. Millions of people are poking the shit out of this cat, right? Everyone's creating a transaction. Like it's a good test for that. Yeah, like even that cat right there, that cat needs a poke. So, but it's a good test. But like when you actually get into like, I mean, Aptos is working to be the largest money mover, which I think is a great use case. Like let's get all these, like I think that's great. But people aren't. I mean. Unless you're taking over like a credit transaction where you're actually doing like POS, you're not going to see that amount of traffic for those types of things. Like it's really low. Like it doesn't.
Or unless you can do wholesale, right? And wholesale, like let's be real, is not going to happen on anything other than a consortium blockchain with super fucking known quantities with super fucking known like operators and
sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
and. And yeah. It's a great use case, right? But it comes down to like in that case, like the wholesale case, like the technology is hard, but the technology is not the problem. The problem is business development, right? Is meeting all those people that can make that product work, who probably all work at big financial institutions and playing a lot of golf with them, right?
Yeah. Well, I was talking to the Strangelove team a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about some of this, but like when those financial institutions look to be able to build that, I don't know if they're using any of these tools. Like those tools will be bespoke.
Yeah. I mean, internal. They can just grab a bunch of, it'll be internal PhD students or hire a bunch of companies or acqui-hire the people they need or whatever. Like, I mean, every time you interact with those sorts of people, like, and I'm not saying this because they're dicks necessarily, but like, it's just the case that when you say, oh, I work on the technology side, they have this like, oh, cool. Right. Like they, you know, when you meet somebody in a business or a networking context you have no utility to them because they realize that if they need somebody like you, they can buy you, right? Their organization has so much money. They can find you or somebody like you and buy you, which mm-hmm. is, you know, as much stuff as there is going on in the space that we work in, you know, I guess it's that sobering reminder of how much comically bigger TradFi is. It's so like, as in we're like a rounding error on them. Like I always tell the story of like, I was talking to some guys and they were talking about partnerships they had. And they were like, yeah, these guys keep wanting us to run validators on these networks. They list off some networks. And I was thinking, fuck, that's actually quite a lot of money they're leaving on the table with a foundation delegation. And, you know, we're probably talking millions of dollars they're leaving on the table because for them, it was like, it's not a core business. Why would we hire a team to go off this thing that might get regulated in 2 years? Why bother?
It's a lot of risk, isn't it? It's like,
for no reason.
Like for a measly couple of mil, you're like,
you don't even get out of bed for it.
Regulatory risk, brand risk, like distracting your core business people with random shit.
But back to Eric's point, right? The Toys Pre-Seed Tools thing, like I kind of wonder if that's like, is that where we are as a whole industry? I mean, I think that's certainly the impression I get. Whenever I talk to anybody who works in like a serious industry, they certainly look at me like I'm a fucking, like I've got snot running down my nose and I'm playing with toy trains, you know? They're like, oh, crypto. Okay. Blockchain, is it? Look at you just playing with your blockchain. Aww. And you can say a sentence too. God,
you got a meme coin.
Don't they grow up so? Don't they grow up so fast?
Got a meme coin. Yeah, it is changing. Like it is starting to. It's starting to tip a little bit, though. Like you see it. Like I see it from the RWA side. I see it with the amount of traditional finance involvement in things. You're starting to see RFPs show up for stable coins in certain situations in certain countries. You're starting to see organizations form around regulatory bodies only. Like you're starting to see a little bit of that tip, right? Like some things are like, whether or not any of these tools that have been built for the last 10 years turn into anything related to any of that I just said is a separate issue. Like I said before, like it doesn't mean that like, just because the technology gets to here doesn't mean any of the things that we did up to this point mean anything. But I do think that the technology is to a point where it's starting to attract a different set of organizations that might accelerate things that are currently occurring. And that maybe that's a rising ship, or a rising tide type situation, meaning like that brings validity to this. And so therefore we have, you know, these other types of things, and now everybody gets involved and they realize that they can trade these types of securities with their bank, or they can also do it somewhere else, right? And that somewhere else has been around for longer. So therefore it brings validity to a certain situation or something. But like, again, that's just a guess, but like I am seeing like it takes forever, but it is starting to happen.
Phrase point, I personally have been seeing some, like, not TradFi, but definitely like Web2 and companies from out of like different industries starting to enter into validating. And I don't think it's necessarily to make income. I think it is to have a presence in Web3 for some brands, like, you know, taking some random examples is maybe Injective, which have onboarded Douche Telecom and NTT Digital.
So could you still repeat that one?
Deutsche Telekom.
That was good. That was better the second time.
The second time?
Sorry, I said it a bit lazy the first time, yeah.
I'll let Max and them know you fixed it. So
I think NTT Digital's like an infrastructure company elsewhere. And it's not just these guys. Like, I think they have also. Sorry?
Do NTT do the timing for the Tour de France?
This might be a different NTT. I think NTT Digital is they're like a Japanese bank, I think.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. I think that's. Yeah.
Well, they do a bunch of stuff. They're like a global services company. But yeah, I think, sorry, Jerome, I interrupted you, but I think that you're right. Those two organizations in particular. And Injective's work there and in bringing them on. I think Deutsche Telekom is a great example of a team that is entering the space. They're doing it credibly. All the validator operations are in-house. They've been doing it for years and years and years. I think, candidly, we have Chainlink to thank for bringing them on board in the first place. Because, you know, I think them running their Chainlink node that's the first kick of the can for them. And now they validate for,
I don't know how many
blockchains it is. I have to ask. Maybe it's a dozen or something like that.
They were like the first round of Chainlink operators, right? Weren't they like really early?
They were pretty early. Yeah. I don't remember exactly when it was they entered, but I mean, I think they're a great organization that is doing it in a very credible way, right? They've had the support that they had for that team initially. It was like an innovation thing. And now it's a whole business unit, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you look at teams like there's Brad Feinstein over at AWS. They operate validators for a number of networks. They have a whole team of engineers that have built open source kind of frameworks for teams to come in and like stand up quick launch things for Chainlink nodes. Or I worked with their team to create a worker node launchpad, which is basically this ML model that's instantiated on the Allura network. So you can go in and launch one on the Allura network just like that, basically using the framework that they developed. But no, I think you're absolutely right that there's these teams that are entering the space, and there's teams that are doing this doing God's work in onboarding these kind of institutions and enterprises. And again, in this very credible way.
So I think, to my own point with people diversifying, so that's, I guess, an entry point into Zelic's business model with validating. So they aren't necessarily you guys aren't running around chasing that type of business as your core business. You are first and foremost a security company and a security auditing company. However, for like payment for service and being in those ecosystems, you guys do like a credit system for your validators. So some foundations might choose to onboard you guys as a validator and make a delegation. And then you guys in return will commit a certain amount of the revenue from that towards like security auditing credits, for example.
Yeah, that's exactly right, man. The team at Zelic brought me on to help lead BD for their audit side, and then also to lead BD for their validator operations unit, right? Like I said, I've got some experience there. That's what I've done over the last number of years, having worked at Linkpool and then onboarding the validator cohort for Allura. I've kind of worked both sides of the sword in that way. you know, Zelic, right? Our mission is pretty laser focused, right? We want to find all the bugs and save all the money. Our auditor cohort really comes from the competitive hacking world of CTFs, right? Which is like the competitive hacking or info security Olympics, right? Our two co-founders founded the team that won number one in the world the last 3 of the 4 years, Perfect Blue, Jazzy and Luna. They ran that and they continue to run that and continue to support the CTF world. Our kind of thesis there is that those problems in the CTF world and in the traditional information security and in the competitive hacking world, they're big problems. They're complex problems. They're hard, right? You've got to be really an incredible mind and an incredible developer and an incredible hacker to be able to go in and solve those problems in the first place, let alone win those competitions. The core thesis really is that that skill set, bringing those people in from that world, is like bringing big fish into a small pond, right? And it really seems to have played out over the years. Our validator operations business is, like you say, it's really intended to support our auditing business from a perspective really of deepening the relationships with these foundations. You know, like I said earlier, right, while we do a number of things, while we do security audits for smart contracts, you know, for Web2 stuff, you know, we've worked with teams like Polymarket, et cetera, on those angles. What we really like to do, and I think what our kind of specialization is in the ability to ramp up and work very closely with these L1s, whether they're building kind of a novel system, a novel alt VM. We work really closely with these foundations over the years, like from pre-launch all the way through many, many cycles later. In operating a validator, A, it's good when shit goes pear-shaped and you pick up the red phone to be able to call somebody on the other end that like has worked with your core node software for months and months and months, right? And has audited it. Certainly to be able to pick up the phone and call and have you guys answer, you know, when the red lights are flashing and you break the glass, to have teams like yourselves that have the expertise, right? That was part of my core thesis that Alora is like, look, I want these guys that they do this stuff for a living. They eat, sleep, and breathe it. And when I hit pager duty, what I want is like the Erics of the world to roll out of bed with a cigarette in their mouth and go, okay, let's figure it out. Don't start smoking though, Eric.
It's just weed, dude.
Okay, cool. No good. No problem then. But
it's fine.
I don't think that's legal in where you are. Are you breaking the law?
Let's. I mean, next to crypto?
Yeah, come on. Hey. That's nothing. Hey. But yeah, with the model for us for validators, like you said, is to work really closely with these teams, these foundations. They delegate to us, and then essentially they earn back a share of the rewards that we earn from their delegation as audit credits. And that's good for foundations. It's good for LSTs. It's good for any of these protocols that have like a big layer one token bag or a token that they can delegate to us. You know, VCs, work with VCs and offer them the same model, right? Delegate to us. You guys earn back audit credits. We're intentionally very selective about the teams that we work with for this process, right? I think that
You mean the blockchain teams you work with?
Or about the teams that we validate for.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
The projects you guys work with.
Yeah, exactly. We're intentionally really selective about choosing networks that we go live on. You know, there's a lot that goes into that calculation, and the hope is that we can get to work with them early and get to work with them for a really long time. That's really our goal, is to build these relationships with these teams for the long term and then support their ecosystems as they flourish.
So are you in effect on retainer then if you are validating for them? Can you be thought of that way? And if you, so you give credit to the team, could that team then like assign credits to, hey, there's this dApp that's coming, I want to give that to them?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Right. They can have it be their own projects that they're building or their own products that they're building that they need audited, or they can turn around and hand off those audit credits to, like, maybe they want to launch a really cool game where you poke a cat on their network. Right. Mm-hmm. And that team maybe is, they're super scrappy, they're bootstrapped. You know, they haven't raised funding. Maybe they want to go live sooner than the grant process or whatever can get them there. And the team has the ability to, we're super flexible. You know, it mattered to us. We want to work with people doing cool stuff, and they're their audit credits to spend how they want. Right. And so they can pass those along to either subsidize that team or wholly cover the cost of the audit, which, you know, I mean, we're really good at what we do. So we're not cheap. But we believe that we're the best in the business. And so those teams get like an S tier security audit that's basically free to them as a function of that delegation. Right. So
that's really cool. That's really cool.
Thanks, man. We like it. The teams that we've worked with have really enjoyed that model so far. So.
I think that is like one of the more valuable, like value adds that I've seen in recent time, like for, you know, like foundation teams. There's like, you know, quite a few different like value adds that people have come up with like over the last few years to be like more relevant to the big delegators like foundations. But I think this one is like a pretty decent and important one, particularly like, I mean, there's a similar deal with like SERP down here where he runs services on behalf of like the
foundation,
say foundation, for example, four teams that are still bootstrapping that they can get access to good quality services while they're sort of coming up. And mm-hmm. like a 1-2 punch of, you know, that perspective as well as like the security perspective. And then I think they're probably also partnered up with, you know, some marketers and stuff like that really helps drive the those smaller teams who need like a bit of a step up.
Yeah, I agree. Do you guys take, is there a liability associated with that? There's no liability, right? You don't take any ownership of that. Does Zelic take any ownership of that? Like if there's a contract issue associated with something you guys have signed off on, is there any, do you guys pick up spares when it comes to, hey, there was a loss associated with this contract and it was something that we reviewed? Like, is there insurance associated to that?
I'm not aware that there's insurance associated with that, but I mean, in over 500 security reviews that we've done, not a single one of our clients has experienced a loss of funds for, you know, scope of work that we've done. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that again, we like get in there. The goal is not to rubber stamp something, but the goal is to stake our reputation on those things. Right. Yeah. So we've never experienced, none of our clients have ever experienced a loss of funds as a result of code that we've reviewed. So, but as far as I you know, anyway,
I think it would not be, be difficult to do, right? For people to like provide that type of guarantee.
I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think that is pretty true on the away from Web3 type stuff. Like that's actually
in the trad space, it's common.
Like, yeah,
yeah. I'm sort of looking at it from a purely like a Web3 perspective.
And people can be pretty litigious, even for potentially for like technical advice and due diligence and stuff like that. So in the traditional space. I guess I've done some work in like insurance and stuff like that without really disclosing anything that I'm not allowed to. Like I have to have, if I'm going to give it like due diligence, and usually due diligence, right, is investors ask for it, right? That's why investors ask for due diligence. They want somebody technical to go in and go like, what's the quality of the code? What's the quality of the technical infrastructure? What's the quality of the people? Whatever it might be. Right? And you go in and you write a report.
I asked our team to take him down. I was sick of what he was talking about. I knew
that was a Zelic situation. I knew that was.
Elon turned him off.
He's back.
The long and short of it is like you write your report, you hand it in, right? And you have to have like pretty good insurance in case, let's say you just missed something fucking massive. And then like mm-hmm. 2 weeks later, the regulator comes, especially if they're in a regulated industry, regulator comes in and goes like, what the fuck? Turns out it was so bad. They had no idea. And you were like there for 2 weeks talking to all their engineering teams and like shooting the shit and trying to find out if they were any good. And they were just hiding all the bad shit from you.
Sure.
They're going to shoot the messenger. They're going to be like, that guy, he talked to all of them. He didn't spot that they were fucking that guy. Animals. And yeah. You'd be like, yeah, we're trying to crack out the insurance, lads. We're in trouble. Yeah.
It's so different, like, you know, tax structures or things like there are liabilities when it comes to, hey, I did your return and these are the situations that we met. Like there's some structure of that in terms of liability. So I was just curious if that.
Yeah, for like accountants
are the same thing. But like just because it came up because we were talking about the what was it, Bybit with the safe wallet fucking hack, like number one. Fucking chef kiss on that thing. That thing was an awesome hack. Like that was like ridiculously cool. Eric, you're on mute. But like,
oh,
the,
I was just saying, wow, like,
yeah,
was,
no shit,
it was wild. Right?
So that, yeah, so somebody they Lazarus took ownership for it, right? So they took over a developer's machine. They figured out a way to be able to move AWS keys, and they got access to that, and they moved specific JavaScript up to AWS that waited for transaction from this specific wallet to then basically produce a different transaction behind the scenes than what was shown in safe. Fucking awesome, man. That is like legitimately cool. And then everybody's like, oh yeah, you know, like, and like, for my eyes, that's totally safe's liability. Like, that is 100% on them. 100%.
Do you reckon that was like a, like just some interested parties doing like the
it,
hack?
It could have been inside.
It was like a funded mercenary hack.
It could have been like some.
No, that was organized. That was people who.
No. It was definitely Lazarus. But like, yeah. If somebody within, is it possible that somebody within safe was promised 100 million or 10 million or 5 million or 2 million to be able to do that or to be able to allow that to happen? I mean,
it's like, just drop the keys on the way out of your office.
Yeah, like,
oh, sure.
And then the other thing that just happened was O1 node getting double signed on Osmosis. Was it Osmosis, Schultze?
It was Osmosis. Yeah,
Osmosis with just like this weird race bug in Horcrux, right? So like they didn't do anything wrong with that. That was just a purely open source, and like that liability is obviously on them, right? Because they're running this software that is. You know, whatever the hell it is. So, but it like this whole idea of like liability, when we start getting, like we were talking about before, Eric, like partnerships and like these groups are like working together. And now we're starting with this huge like interchain type structure. And like we're starting to like these independent entities are now working much closer together. And this idea of liability is a pretty cool topic, actually. I'm not talking about Zelic. Like it has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but I'm just saying like it's just pretty interesting.
So, Eric, I don't know if like the liability would be on them, but they do have the opportunity to like step up to the plate for something like I'm talking about the double sign. Like,
well, they did
when
they,
you delegate Horcrux like
did
a public,
step up and help.
Yeah, so yeah, the that Strangelove team,
Strangelove.
What?
Strangelove.
Yeah, Strangelove. Sorry, you're talking really quiet, and Schultz's microphone is exceptionally loud. It's like.